Hey, that little boop boop starts the show. Hi, everybody. I'm Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio on Flag Day. Yes, it is June 14th. A lot of people forget that holiday. I believe it's the official day when the Continental Congress approved the flag. That's what makes it Flag Day. I'm not sure what year that was, but this is June 14th, 2018. So enjoy the flag today. I got mine waving outside. It's a nice breezy day out there, so it looks pretty darn good. Okay, we have a wonderful show for you today. We're going to talk about Title I, which is really important. And I like talking about Title I. We've got the new magazine called Accessibility, Compliance, and Equity in Education, and Title I helps those things. All right, and you can learn about our new magazine at ace-ed.org. Subscriptions are free. It's a digital publication. Just go over and sign up, and we'll send it to you. But there's an awful lot of information over there just on the website, and then you just click through on the magazine, and it really looks great. ace-ed.org, and that ACE stands for Accessibility, Compliance, and Equity in Education. And also, of course, you can follow us on Twitter over at EduTalk Radio. Facebook, you can friend us at the same place. All right. Today we've got Charles Blaschke, who's the founding president of Education Turnkey Systems, which is a 40-year-old market research consulting firm which provides information and analyses about federal policies and funding for K-12 purchases of technology and other related products and services. We'll talk about Title I. He's an expert, IDEA, school improvement grants, and other things. And it's a pleasure to have Charles here today. And on that note, a big thank you to my friends over at Waterford Institute who helped me put together the show today. Obviously, that's waterford.org. And you go over there, you're going to learn everything you need to know about pre-K-2 education. They are the best. Waterford.org, Waterford Institute. We've got Ann Brown as well. Let me start with ladies first. Ann, are you there?
Hey, I'm here, Charles. Great to talk to you.
Oh, it's a pleasure to have you here. And Ann, your VP of Education and Business Development over at Waterford, just give everybody an overview of Waterford. And also, how your company would work with someone like Charles, who I'll introduce in a couple of seconds. Ann, you're on. It's your microphone.
Yeah. Okay, great. Thank you. So, you know, as you said, Waterford is focused on pre-K to 2 literacy, math, and science. And
yep.
Then we recently just brought over Curriculate, which is which is literature-based instruction for 3rd grade to 12th grade. You know, everything online, everything research-based, 40 years of efficacy research to prove that what we're doing makes a difference for kids. And what we're most proud of is the ongoing impact that we have on children and helping them become great readers, and we really feel like reading is the ultimate equity for kids, for anyone.
It really is, and I've done a lot of shows with you guys, and I know I've done shows with educators in Mississippi and Utah and all over the country with you folks,
yeah.
And I'll tell you what you guys provide for these school districts that works so well, that does bring about accessibility, okay, and like with Upstart, and equity in the end, okay, because,
yeah.
You know, it just... It makes it happen. So, and you're good. And as the VP of Education and Business Development, she's not that they get complaints. She has nothing to do with the complaint department. That's in Bangladesh, right? Right. Right.
Actually, our complaint department is right outside of my office. So
there you
so
go.
We
you
take
don't
that
go
very
the phone
seriously,
ever,
but we don't have many of those.
Yeah, does the phone ever ring? Those people are covered
no.
with like cobwebs, right? Really?
Never.
Really. Those people
exactly.
are covered with cobwebs.
Exactly.
Yeah. There's the
you know
you
one guy in
your
the corner drinking coffee.
Yeah, or whatever he's got in that cup. We don't know, okay? We don't
but,
know.
But hey,
I do want to
yes. thank you for allowing us to have Charles come on. Charles, you know, I've been working with Charles for, 20 years probably. He is the leading
wow.
expert
so you
in
met
Title
Charles
I. Thank...
You met Charles when you were 5 years old. I can do math.
I did.
Yeah,
yes.
Cool. 20 and 5. Yeah.
You know, Charles was 6. I was 5. It was great. Anyway, he has been just, you know, the leading expert in Title I funding, education funding, state-to-state funding. And he and I were actually on the phone, I don't know, a week or week and a half ago, and he started talking to me about you know, some of the changes, some of the flexibility in Title I. And I went, you know, Charles, I think everybody needs to hear this. Would you come on the radio with us? So I'm really thrilled
right.
to have him on here with us.
And I thank you for bringing him. So on that note, I couldn't do a better introduction. Hi, Charles. It's Larry.
Hey, Larry.
How are you?
Pretty good.
Good. Where are you calling from?
Arlington, Virginia.
Sounds good to me. Got good weather down there, I hear, today.
Yep. Well, about time.
And I also know you've got a championship hockey team somewhere in that area. So that's good, too.
Yeah. Finally got a winner ever since Jack Party had the
About time. I'm old enough to remember the Washington Senators actually playing. Okay, so it's about time Washington got a winner there. It's terrific. Today's Title I. Charles, you want to just tell everybody, if I didn't do it well enough, what Education Turnkey Systems does, which is your company?
Well, hey, Ann, how you doing? Actually, we got started a little bit about, well, before Waterford got started. We're involved in the early years of the formulation of Title I and have continued to monitor developments in that area, including the development of the first policy manual on Title I. And more recently, he's been working with a large number of clients, helping them understand some of the trials and tribulations and regulations related to Title I. And as you mentioned, there were some significant changes. Perhaps the one that gets the most publicity is the supplement, not supplant provision. This administration has decided not to try to come up with any regulations explaining what's in the law, but rather leave it up to the states to interpret what the law says. And basically, in a nutshell, it says that if you're a school, Title I school, particularly a school-wide program, about 77% of them are, with 40% or more poverty, all you have to do is to ensure that the amount of state and local funds going to all other schools are the same that are going into the Title I. Then you can spend Title I to supplement that. Now, how do you measure that? Well, it's supposed to come up with a per pupil allocation, but that's pretty hard to do. They may be able to come up with some way of calculating that in the very near future. That's one big flexibility. However, there were increasingly more and more flexibilities to the old No Child Left Behind under the Obama administration. And as a result, even though the Obama folks have tried to kill all these regulations and policies, 90% of the flexibilities that were in place under No Child Left Behind 3 years ago are still available and applicable for states to let districts and provide guidance to districts to use that flexibility. Things like being able to use Title I funds to train math teachers if the school is identified as failing. And even though the non-Title I teachers are not in Title I, they could be taught using Title I funds to improve math, things like that.
Charles, let me ask you something. Obviously, the administration's changed. The Bush administration created, George W., created No Child Left Behind. And I don't think that was a perfect law, but they were very interested in education. Okay, the Obama administration with Arne Duncan and everybody, they seem to be very interested in education and all that. And I'm not asking these questions from a political point of view. There was a lot of controversy when Mrs. DeVos became our Secretary of Education, etc. The three administrations, as you look at them, okay, which ones were working best for education, would you say, in Title I? Because people get settled into a thing, you know. They look at these things, they get settled, but each administration's different. How would you go back and look at them?
Well, I would say that Bush 2, and totally different from Bush 1, okay, did ensure greater accountability, but there was a one, you know, one size fits all philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
They had some very controversial programs, plagued with conflicts of interest, like Reading First, et cetera, which our church was not a great fan of. But, you know, 4 or 5 years later, hey, when you have one Reading First school in a district and then 20 others adopt the approach that was used, something's working. Now, Obama basically got more prescriptive in terms of what you can do, what types of prescriptions for failing schools, perhaps only prescribing certain things. And the Bush, Trump DeVos administration, it had a great impact on education, not for what it proposed to do, but what it proposed to sneak under the door and basically to dismantle a lot of the flexibilities that were previously around and regulations that met the intent, the original intent of Title I. So there you have it.
Yeah. Thank you for that. That's great. That's great insight. I got to tell you, there's more money coming. How? And you mentioned that 1,000 districts, not today, but we're talking and preparing the show. You mentioned 1,000 districts will be receiving a significant increase. Okay, where's that money coming from? Where's it come from?
Well, about 600 districts that are getting increases of 200,000 or more, which are significant. Many large districts. And they're usually getting that money because of a $300 million increase in the recent appropriations. There are another 400, and there's some overlap, 400 districts. They're getting large percentage, between 20 and 2 to 300% increases due to mistakes in census data, changes in population movement, and, you know, that part of that increase of $300 million. Many of these districts consider this a windfall, and rather than expanding the program, hiring teachers, et cetera, they're looking upon it as a windfall, and they're probably going to be spending some of that reserve they've been holding back on since January on this year, spending that July 1st. And then, of course, expenditures for products and services, particularly professional development, using that would have been carryover money, that has to be obligated by June 30th in 44 states.
Wow, it's so complicated. They need companies like yours, Education Turnkey Systems, to make this all make sense. Charles, I want to ask you something. I want to get down to the nitty-gritty on this, okay? Talk to me about, and the audience, obviously. And by the way, Ann, do you have anything to ask or add? I don't mean to leave you out before I forget. Ann?
Nope. Let's just keep going with Charles. That's great.
Okay,
he's,
fine.
He's a wealth
I didn't
of
want
knowledge.
You to, he is, and I didn't want you to feel left out.
Nope, I don't. Thank you.
Cool. Okay, very good. All right. So, Charles, I want to talk. I want you to talk about this, and this is key because you're not per se an educator. I want you to talk, okay, about the impact of Title I, and I want you to tell us if school districts are really as knowledgeable about it as they should be, because times keep changing. We just established that. Okay, and you got to keep on top of everything, let alone this too. Talk to me about the impact that Title I has. It's important, and how school districts work with it.
Well, first of all, Title I is rather all pervasive, in the sense that if Title I increases in a district, because the criteria used for Title I increases or cuts are part and parcel of other titles like Title II, teacher training, Title III, et cetera. You know, these programs are also going to increase. So, you know, as Title I funds go up, they're going to go up proportionately in some of the other programs.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's an anchor. I mean, it's a good barometer in that sense. Now, let me also say that the increases that we identified among the 5,000 districts, those are preliminary, and there have to be adjustments to make. And when I said sneaking in under the door, I meant something like this adjustment. The new law creates a private school ombudsman office in the State Department. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And typically, one major role of that office is to make sure private schools and charter schools that serve Title I kids get their equitable share of Title I funds. School districts, normally like to see their money flowing out the door following a child to a charter school.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this administration did change regulations in IDEA, special ed, which basically says if you are a new charter school, you don't have any enrollment, you're an independent, and you're considered a local education agency, and Title I kids will be coming into that school, you get a certain amount. But there's no basis for deciding how many kids are going from the public school to the charter school. So the state will come up with a guess as to how many. And not only is that money flowing to that charter school based on an estimate, which this new office in the State Department will ride herd on, they also get money for things like response to intervention approaches. So the point being, this administration is taking what they can out of Title I, IDEA, and making sure it goes to support the priorities, charter schools, choice, et cetera, that this administration has proposed, that Congress has disposed and said, no, no, we're not going to go with that. And it's not too popular among school districts, as you may guess.
It's absolutely amazing. Charles, do you talk to a lot of school districts? Charles, did you hear me?
Yep. Yep.
Yeah. Do you talk to a lot of school districts?
Well, certain states, yes. There are associations of Title I groups around.
Right.
Let me jump in on that.
Please.
You know, I do talk to a lot of school districts as well and, you know, work with them directly. And you know, to answer kind of the original part of that question, are school districts aware? Absolutely. I mean, Title I funding is a key component in the schools. And generally, there is someone who is over all these federal programs, and they really do have a very in-depth understanding of this law. I always almost think of them like tax accountants. You know, they have to stay really on top of what are all of these priorities and what are these laws and what's the flexibility. And so I would say that schools themselves are pretty informed.
And you feel good that they are, as you talk to
the
school districts.
Yeah, I do. I think districts are very informed. I think sometimes it's Title I is a little mysterious when you get down to the school levels and, you know, what's happening and what's the law, because it is a complex law. And again, not to say that that anyone is keeping information for someone, but the complexity of the law and the fact that it changes quickly and it changes after every administration, you know, I think that maybe principals don't have the depth of knowledge, but they certainly have someone sitting next to them at the district level that that their whole existence is to understand the depths of this law and make the most of it for children. So
yeah, I want to go further than that. Do they? I want to ask this right. Do principals? How responsible are principals? Okay, for spending the dollars. Once the dollars come in, and I know it's like a tax form. Okay, now the dollars are there. Okay, what happens next within a school district? I don't know whether that's Charles or you, Ann. Pass it to Charles if you want. But,
well,
you know, the people who run the buildings, okay,
yeah,
all of a sudden
I
get the cash. You know, where's it all lay? Once it's really there, down to the bones. Yeah, go ahead.
It's a district-to-district decision for that. I mean, there are requirements in the law, and Charles, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but you can serve school districts that have 35, or excuse me, you can serve school buildings that have 35% or more title or children that would qualify for Title I, you have to serve any building that has 75% or more. And so if those, you know, and then it's kind of up to a school district to decide, like, what's their cut point. You know, a school district might say, our cut point is 50%, you know, or is right at that 35%. And then how they're going to distribute the funds. So that all kind of happens at the district level. And in some cases, districts will recommend or decide that a way to spend Title I that can impact children the most might be a certain way. But many, and I'm going to say many, I'm not going to say most, but many districts put that into the school and it becomes a school choice. So it just, you know, it really varies. The key is what could be done with those funds. And over my, you know, 20 years in education since I was five years old, over that time, you know, what I've seen as a trend, and maybe Charles, you can comment on this, is a greater flexibility in the use of funds. I mean, this supplement versus supplant piece that Charles is talking about is huge, because it used to be if you were buying a solution for a school using Title I dollars, the school district or the school funds outside of Title I couldn't put a dollar into that, or then all of a sudden they had to buy that same thing for everyone or take out as soon as like another school that maybe wasn't Title I bought that same thing, then they had to say, oh, well, now it's the district responsibility. So the district had to do everything. And now with this new flexibility, being able to say, oh, I'm going to put an equal number of dollars for our Title I children as we do for our non-Title I children, you know, kind of opens that opportunity. And I think I'm saying that correctly, Charles, but that flexibility just makes a huge difference in how children get served.
Yeah,
so go ahead, Charles, please.
Let me just throw a little monkey in the wrench in the monkey, or whatever the analogy is. And that is, it may be. I mean, like 1997, we worked with Chairman of the Education Committee Goodling for school-wide programs, which Ann mentioned, that they have great flexibility in commingling funds from other federal programs, mixing them together, and with some guidelines, spending that money to serve all kids in that school. That was 1997, okay? The Texas Education Agency just approved and allowed districts to implement that 2 years ago. So that's almost 20 years. My point is that this flexibility that is implied in the new law does not come out and say you can do this rather than being silent on it, states are going to do what? Nothing. They're going to say you can't do that. And that's my concern about this new law, that all of the flexibilities that were provided way back when districts would like to do the commingling and being held accountable and so forth. But if the state doesn't allow it because you know, the state auditor's job would be made more difficult. You know, it goes on and on and on. So where it used to be the bitches about regulations were between the districts and the federal government, today it's going to be between the districts and some of the state departments of education who are not allowing the flexibilities that local principals and Title I directors know about.
You know, I want to ask you, and I guess this might be a political question, but I don't mean it to be that way. When you say some states are, some states aren't, okay? And bear with me as I ask this question, everybody, okay? Because are the states that aren't, okay, are they more conservative states than those that are? Just Massachusetts versus Alabama as an example.
I don't think that's the determining factor, Larry.
No,
I agree. I think it has to do with I think it just has to do with the leadership at the state and what you know, what policies are in place and how quickly things can change and adjust. And some states are just more progressive towards that than other states. Versus,
I love the way you answered that.
Versus saying,
you
know, red state, blue state.
Yeah, well, I didn't want to dance around some states, you know, without getting a feel for which states kind of we were talking about. Okay, and your answer made me very happy, Ann. Okay, that
okay.
We can't measure it like that. I'm serious because I don't like this red blue. I was going to say black and white, but red blue. Okay, that's not a good way to look at the world. Okay, and I was thrilled with your answer. I got to tell you that. All right. Guys, this was terrific. Thank you so much. And, you know, we can talk about this some more. I'll talk to Kara because this is really important stuff. Really important stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
I think this is good information for people to share. And
that's wonderful.
Charles's insight. Thank you so much, Charles, for bringing that to us. And
Charles.
Great.
I mean, really, you know your stuff. This is fantastic. Thank you.
All right.
Okay. Thanks, guys, and you're wonderful as always. Charles, it was a pleasure to have you here, my friend. Thank you so much, both of you. Bye-bye.
All right, enjoy.
Thanks.
Oh, I will.
Thank
you too.
You.
Thank you. I enjoyed the show. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, Ann Brown, who's been on from VP of Education and Business Development at Waterford Institute. And that was Charles Blaschke, the expert, founder and president of Education Turnkey Systems. All right, we're going to archive the show, education-talkradio.org. Tweet it out at EduTalkRadio. Check out ace-ed.org. You'll be impressed. Sign up for a free subscription. I'm Larry Jacobs. Thank you, Waterford. This is Education Talk Radio, a pre-K-12 edition. Thanks for listening.